podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Pop. Welcome to DC For You, the only weekly show here on Place to Be Nation Pop that's all about DC Comics. DC Comics has something for everyone. I am one of your hosts, Mr. Todd Weber, and I am joined, as always, by Russell Sellers. Russell, how are you this week on DC For You?
It's been 1 week since I talked to you, Todd.
And oh, stop.
Nope. No, we're going to keep the music references going for Flash Month. Just for the hell of it. I don't know why I went there, but anytime I get a chance to make a Bare Naked Ladies reference, I'm going to try and do it. But it's always going to be
the superhero mentioned in that song?
Damn it, you would call me out on that, wouldn't you?
Aquaman, baby.
Oh, so now I feel awful for not pulling that out. I should have known. I should have freaking known that you would flip it on me and it would be an Aquaman reference.
Well, that song is well known for fast speech, and this is the Flash month, so I guess we can call it a technicality. Hold me now and watch me hoodwink. No, I'm make you stop playing. Now I can't stop myself. But we are continuing Flash month here at DC For You with a look at another relic of the past. A relic is kind of a derogatory term. We're going to say this is a time capsule, and we're taking you back to fall of 1990. I was on my second freshman year of college, I believe, where CBS Television debuted a live-action show featuring our hero, the Scarlet Speedster, Barry Allen, the Flash. Russell, do you have any memory of this being, what, 3? No, you were about 6 at the time?
Yeah, I was about 6 years old when this show came out. And, you know, superhero, live-action superhero shows, anyway, were a rarity in those days. Even animated shows were only really in reruns at that point. We wouldn't get some really good new ones for another couple of years.
Yep.
But I remember this show vaguely coming out. It was one that, of course, followed on the heels of the Tim Burton's Batman, which actually I was a little older than that. I was born in 82, so I was actually about 8 when this show came out.
Sounds about right.
Yeah,
math works out.
Yeah, 8 years old when this show dropped, and it was not one that like really stuck with me. At the time, it was just kind of it was fascinating, of course, because there was a superhero TV show. This is new. This is something that I'm not used to. I thought that superheroes were only going to be in the movies, and yeah, it didn't really appeal much to 8 year old me. But a couple of years down the road, when I got a little bit older, and the show was it was in syndication briefly. And I was able to watch it as like I think I was about 11 or 12. It hit much better that time. But I was really curious to see how this show would hold up for me as an adult. And looking back into this time capsule that is 1990, and anybody who's familiar with the other show that I am a co-host of, 90 to Nothing, where we look at 1990s movies, sometimes looking back ain't always a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, we may not. I don't know. I think I might. I had such low expectations for my rewatch of this that I think I was pleasantly surprised with not necessarily the acting, because that wasn't always good. That wasn't mostly good.
It is mostly bad.
Or the special effects, or the plot, or the villains, but some of the stuff that they pulled to create this televised version of The Flash came somewhat comics influenced, and I think they got enough of it right that it could have been more than a one season success. As it was only a 22 episode run, one season, and canceled for a combination of low ratings, and it was bloody expensive to produce. Yeah.
$1.5 million per episode, and back in 1990, that was a mint. That's insane. Like it cost that much to produce one episode of this show.
Yes,
I mean that's jaw dropping for 1990. I don't know what that would come out in today's dollars, but man, you'd have to be doing some Game of Thrones like numbers in order to stick around.
Right. And, you know, more people watched broadcast television back then, but they jumped around with time periods or time slots for the show. They hoped to run it on Thursday nights against Cosby Show. That didn't work out. moved it later and put it on the death slot on Saturday nights. It was kind of frustrating what they did, but they had a full season order, so they kept the show all year, you know, which is a good thing. You see some of those returns in this day and age, and the show would have been canceled right away.
You're right. And wait a minute. Gee, they moved its time slot around and as a result had low ratings and wound up canceling the show. Where have I heard this story before?
The CW.
That and Cartoon Network.
Oh, Justice League Unlimited and et cetera.
Green Lantern, the animated series.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I'm being a bad DC fan.
No, I'm still holding a grudge over that one, Cartoon Network. If you want people to actually watch a show and you get them used to a show being a certain time slot and then you keep changing it without telling anybody, of course they don't know when to watch the show.
Well, when we do Green Lantern Month, and we will,
that
will be something we'll talk about a lot because that was just perfectly done. That was a fantastic animated show. Yeah. But
this show, not so much. But
not so much. Let's talk about what we liked first of all. What did you like first and foremost?
Honestly, I liked John Wesley Shipp in the role. I think that he was properly cast for the part, and the costume. I actually thought that the form-fitting Flash suit that they came up with actually looked pretty good, honestly. It's designed really well. It looks like it stepped right off of a more modern comic book page, like from the 1980s Flash run, or really from the run of Flash that that Mark Waid was writing.
That kind of darker, richer red, you know, not the bright red that we see in the traditional Silver Age Flash, but yeah, almost a maroon red, right?
Yeah, it's so much darker, so it looks more like the Wally West suit, and the belt that he has on, and the Flash symbol on the chest very much looks like that Wally West costume. So that part I dug, and I felt like it was really fun to see some of the stuff that they do in the episode. Specifically, on multiple occasions in the pilot, they call out that because Barry's metabolism is running so hard and so fast that he has to eat a lot of food. So
and that's from the early days of the Wally West
series
post-crisis.
And seeing John Wesley Shipp like stuffing his face with pizza and hot dogs, and even at one point saying that he must really be losing it because even the dog food was starting to look good.
Kibble sounds good.
I appreciated that too.
Mm-hmm.
So John Wesley Shipp, I think, is working really hard with the not-so-great material that he's handed. But one thing that I will say I liked about this is that it's very Silver Age origin for the Flash. It's not the Geoff Johns version. So if you've watched the CW show or if you've read like modern Flash comics, you know that Reverse Flash went back and killed Barry's mom, and that's what set him on the path to becoming a superhero. Well, this is not that take. Nora and Henry Allen are very much alive, still married, and there is no reverse Flash to be found. None of that.
No.
None of that is here. This is all. There's no particle accelerator either. That's not how he gets powers. In fact, the superhero stuff of the show seems like very matter of fact. I guess is the way I would describe it, because you have Barry Allen, just like his original incarnation, just gets struck by random lightning and doused in random chemicals around his lab, and he wakes up with super speed. That's all the explanation you're going to get.
And that is true to the origin of the Silver Age Flash. You get the you think of the classic panel of Barry in his lab coat, although kind of trying to brace himself from all the chemicals falling on him. I think that was fine. They got to it pretty quickly in the actual episode. Any other things you can say you really liked about it before I do mine?
I dig that Danny Elfman score. That is something that I definitely didn't expect the first time when I did this rewatch. I had forgotten that Danny Elfman wrote the main title theme for The Flash. He doesn't do the music throughout the show. That's someone else. But he wrote and composed the Flash main title theme that you hear at the beginning and end of the episode. And that is not the only homage to the 1989 Batman. The opening shot of the show has a picture, or is a basic shot of the Central City skyline, and it gives you that little title card at the bottom that says Central City. And I was like, that is a direct homage to the 1989 Batman that this show definitely was trying to be like in a whole bunch of ways.
Yeah, so, absolutely. But one important thing they didn't have was Tim Burton. They had very, I would say, pedestrian TV directors for the most part. I don't know if they've done anything, but you go through and you compare it to the Batman movie that really was unique and different. And this, you read the script and you follow kind of the characters and the acting, and it's just kind of flat in comparison. The action scenes are okay. The special effects, they try to rely on way too much for this. And boy, they were expensive special effects, although some of them were kind of quaint and charming. The sped up film kind of.
Yeah, that part was fine.
Once in a while, there'd be an obvious green screen thing that you just go, whoa, stop it.
That ending bit, the tornado.
Yeah.
Bit is still kind of funny. And it's funny that the first episode of the CW Flash also had Barry running like really, really fast around and like creating a reverse tornado or whatever. That's just a pretty typical thing for the Flash, I guess. You kind of expect to see that at some point. But there are probably some other things to really like about this episode that I'm missing. So what am I missing, Todd?
Well, I share your affection towards Ship as the Flash and Barry. I think he does a good enough job. He definitely looks the part, kind of has that square-jawed Captain America look almost. Well, pre Chris Evans Captain America, but you know what I'm saying. It's kind of what we expected, that rough-and-tumble look. And he fills out the Flash costume well, looks good on him. Costume itself I like, although when I was of age and the show was coming out, I hated what they did to the nose. That bugged me so much that they brought the nose down and made it more into a cowl over the nose. And as I don't know if I was a purist, but I didn't like that so much.
It's very bird-like, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does have that kind of beak look to it. But otherwise, I think the costume is top-notch, honestly, for what it was. It does have a little bit of the puffiness to it that you would see on when the Hulk would come to Toys R Us for the meet and greets. I don't know if you ever saw that. He would wear a big puffy suit, and that kind of reminded me of that, with that velour almost to it. I really liked the chemistry of John Wesley Shipp and Amanda, was it Amanda, the woman who played Tina McGee?
Yes. God, I forgot what her name is, but
she, Amanda Pays, is that it? I can look it up. Something yeah, like that.
That sounds about, yes, Amanda Pays plays Dr. McGee. And funnily enough, she actually plays that same role on the CW Flash.
I love that they brought her back as the exact same character, kind of contemporary of our friend Harrison Wells. So I enjoyed her performance and especially the chemistry between them. They seem to have a lot more chemistry than Barry and teenage Iris West did here.
Maybe that's why Iris West was written off the show after one episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think comic savvy readers would know that, oh, that's the girl he ends up with, right?
Sure.
Just like in Arrow, Oliver's supposed to end up with Dinah or Laurel, the way they renamed her, but the chemistry was so off there, they went in a different direction, and here they definitely had a more of a chemistry with he and the McGee character than ever.
Oliver forever.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go there. So I'm going to just move on because now I don't want to get triggered too much, but we're going to keep going. For the record, anyway, I'm not Team Laurel. I'm not saying that. I'm just, you know who I am. I am.
I do. I got you. Like it's all good. Like, no, comics accuracy is something that I definitely like to see on screen, and that they at least put Iris in this first episode. It's cool. Like it, they tried, they put her there, but oh boy, is she not good. Not only like just not a good actress, just she's kind of awful.
And they set her up to be this kind of computer artist, digital artist doing a show. Not anything like the Iris West we've known as a reader of comics over the years, you know, who was kind of feisty. He had a definite personality in the Silver Age Flash. Maybe not in, say, the Flash of Two Worlds issue we read last week, but they developed her over the years until DC killed her off in, I want to say, 1983 or so. Well, maybe it's earlier than that, 1981. And subsequently, Barry Allen murdered the Reverse Flash and was put on trial and yada yada. It became very convoluted. But I digress. Iris was not the best part of this show. She wasn't even a good part of the show. I'm trying to think of some other things. I agree with you on the score. Danny Elfman, you heard it. You knew it was Danny Elfman. And it was evocative of the Batman theme, so well enough. I also thought some of the set design and the look of Central City kind of reminded me of what they were trying to do, or what they were trying to do was make you think of Batman, that same kind of thing. But the direction and the rest of it did not feel like that. I mean, the rest of it felt very ho-hum.
Yeah, it felt like it was really trying to exist in the same world as Burton's Batman. Like, maybe somewhere in the back of somebody's mind, they were like, you know what, if we create a TV show that feels like it could exist within that world, we could move towards this idea of maybe having these characters meet up at some point or another. And honestly, I could see John Wesley Shipp's take on The Flash meeting Michael Keaton's version of Batman and it kind of feeling like they belong together. They had that kind of thing going. And it might not have been the case if John Wesley Shipp hadn't played the character, but you know, he was not the original choice for Barry Allen.
I was not aware of that. Who pray tell was the original cast, Barry Allen?
The original offer was made to an actor named Jack Coleman, who turned it down because he didn't want to wear tights or be involved in a superhero show.
Isn't that the horn-rimmed glasses guy?
Yes, it is. He would go on to play Noah Bennett on Heroes.
Excellent. I had a good-looking actor. He was also on Scandal, which was a show I enjoyed with my wife, and I watched it. And that would have been an interesting casting, knowing what we know now and having seen Noah Bennett, who was one of the better parts of Heroes. But I think Shipp was just fine in the role, honestly.
That was one of those things that didn't work out, but it didn't work out for the best. John Wesley Shipp turned out to be exactly the guy they should have had on there. Now we've praised the show for the things that we liked. Time to get into the stuff that just don't work. And we've called out.
You start. Yeah.
The directing, we already know. That didn't work. And I called out, like, Iris just not being it. That's bad. She is a bad actress, and she is portrayed horribly. The writing did her no favors. And speaking of weird writing, when they explain Barry's suit, something just it struck me as weird, because Dr. McGee explains that it is in fact a Soviet suit designed for underwater underwater work, and I was like, how does that correlate to a friction resistant suit in, you know, the air, like in the open air? How does that help with super speed?
Oh,
Doc, I don't get it, but
it's red. Russians equals red. Don't you know, Russell?
Yeah, that was the other thing. I was like, this just happened to be Soviet and it's red. Oh, yeah, I get it. Another thing that I don't like about this story is it ultimately becomes a revenge tale, not unlike 1989's Batman. And that, to me, that doesn't play like the Barry Allen that I'm used to in any incarnation. He's even driven to the point where it feels like he's going to go kill this Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome reject. Named Pike, who is like maybe the most generic villain that I've ever seen.
Pretty spot on. That guy was bad, and his facial tattoos were terrible. His dialogue was terrible. We should talk about Barry's brother, who wasn't bad. His acting was actually better, but he died about 40 minutes into the episode. So.
Yeah, because that's the other thing about this episode. It's way too long.
It is very, very, very long.
It's an hour and a half if you take out, like, when it aired on television, it was a two-hour premiere. And that was pretty commonplace back in the day. But when you sit down and watch this one, even as an hour and a half made-for-TV movie, which is how it kind of plays, It's about a half hour too long. Like, you could have cut some of this stuff out. It drags so hard at times where you'll struggle to stay awake. It's like,
they were in love with their special effects. They would take these effect sequences and make them last too long. Barry doesn't need – we don't need to see him cleaning his house for 5 minutes.
I really didn't. I was like, okay, that was, like, good for a couple of seconds. Why is it still going? Like, it's – I was like, Barry, you're the Flash. You would have had all this done in, like, you know, like microseconds. I mean, we see that on the Flash TV show now, where Barry will run through and clean up a house real quick, but it's 2 seconds. I mean, it's so much more impressive. But like you said, they were so in love with their special effect, their speed effect, that they wound up making it look like he was not moving as fast as he should.
Yes, and we should talk also about his brother, who, again, killed off. But his brother is named Jay, kind of an homage to Jay Garrick, who we don't – no mention of him. But he's definitely kind of fills the Jay role, at least to their personalities. However, there's about 20 years difference between these brothers' age.
Yeah, there's a long amount of time between these two, like – Barry is definitely the baby brother.
Yeah. And Barry seems about late 20s, early 30s here.
That's about right.
But he's, you know, he's romantically linked with Iris, who they say is 25. She says, I'm 25. I'm not ready to get married. Okay. And well, that's good. But, you know, the actress did not feel like she was that age at all. Maybe it was a 1990 thing. Barry's brother just seemed very, very old, and apparently he was only 10 years or so younger than the actor who was playing Barry and Jay's father, Henry Allen.
Oh, and dear God, did I hate this take on Henry Allen.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
This
overprotective retired cop.
Awful. Just the dirt worst. version of a superhero parent. I mean, he is. Oh man, I don't even know what to say for it, Todd. It's just so poorly written. I realize that is a. I forget that actor's name, but I've seen him in plenty of other little things here and there. And I think of him more as a comedic actor.
You know, yes. Somebody
who's got like some comedy chop to him. And seeing him play Henry Allen, it just does not work. It is a poorly conceived idea and one of the grossest offenses of this show to me.
Yeah, and, you know, back in the day, just knowing what I know about Barry Allen, his father wasn't really part of the mythos until Jeff Johns wrote him, as far as I understand. I'm just trying to think any mention of his dad. You know, that I may be proven wrong, but it just doesn't ring true to me. And boy, it just felt, I can't remember the actor's name, but it was a weird, almost Irish cop, stereotypical take. And, he becomes overprotective about his son, Barry, after Jay dies. And Barry has all these weird father issues. It's a tough read on the situation. I don't know that. Don't know that it was the right choice. There it is. Emmett Walsh played Barry Allen's father, Henry Allen. He was in Blade Runner, did some other things. But one of those guys that was a supporting actor in a million things, but poorly realized here in The Flash 1990.
Yeah, he doesn't work at all well for Henry Allen. I certainly prefer the John Wesley Shipp playing Henry Allen and the CW Flash.
Yep.
Just that version of the character is so much better to me. Also really weird to see Barry having an older brother. Though I liked the chemistry between the two. I thought that they actually played off each other pretty well. Their scenes are largely good. But overall, this is a meandering origin story that ultimately winds up in a pretty ham-fisted revenge tale where the hero comes up with his own name just out of the blue and also comes up with his own symbol out of the blue. There's nothing about it that feels organic. It all feels like, God, we've got to put this in the episode. We have to hurry up and get to it. Well, how does he get to this point? Oh, he just does it.
Yeah, was it Earl the dog? Earl the dog was good. Barry's pet dog. He was fine.
I did like that sequence whenever he's trying to walk the dog and he runs into a bush. I thought that was funny. Or the first time that his powers really kick in, he shreds his clothes and winds up running to a beach that's 30 miles away. That part has very much been recreated in the CW Flash.
Oh, sure.
There are several, going back and watching this episode, there are several homages to this episode in the CW series. So they're hardcore calling back to it. Now, I haven't watched much of the rest of the show, but I know that some of the episodes are probably pretty good.
Well, they couldn't. The villain choice for the pilot was so
lame.
Lame, ineffective. Having a biker gang, very, very generic 80s action. And this is 1990, so, you know, if you're going to have a superhero, have a mastermind meeting up against him. And there doesn't feel like there was a arc. This feels very episodic, that standalone episode feel for this entire series. It doesn't feel like anything more than, okay, we set up the tale, and every episode's going to be a little bit of just establishing this world, but not having any connecting threads like we had. And I guess the easiest comparison is the CW Flash, because right from the get-go, you had a direction. But that's just might be a sign of the times, too. Back then, even until I'd say shows like ER and maybe Hill Street Blues, which was concurrent with this. You had that. Well, Hill Street was a couple years earlier. Boy, those villains, that could have been improved, and the show kind of dragged because of that. I enjoyed Alex Dazaire as his partner, lab partner. He was fine. He's a guy that's done a lot of stuff. You see him in other things. So I just wish that a few things about the show had been tweaked, and it would have been better. Of course, you got some name actors as some of the villains in the Rogues Gallery later on.
Sure. We got, of course, everybody I would hope would remember that Mark Hamill comes along later and plays the Trickster, and would ultimately go on to reprise that role in Justice League Unlimited, the episodes Flash and Substance, which is really good, and even in the CW show. He comes back for two episodes, Tricksters and Running to Stand Still. And John Wesley Shipp actually gets to put on the Flash costume one more time in the CW show, like in the most recent crossover episode. They did that with I forget the name of it now.
Elseworlds.
That's right. they had a random appearance of John Wesley Shipp wearing his old 1990 Flash costume, and it was a trip, man. That was a pretty badass little moment, even though, honestly, looking back at this show, you kind of get why it didn't make it.
Well, so we can think about this. He reprised this character, and this character was the only one from that whole universe who survived, right?
That seems to be the case.
I think so. I think that was like the lead-in, right?
Yeah, he was running away from the monitor and the little teasers leading up to it, and then when he appears on Earth One, he sees John Diggle and calls him John, but he's like, "Where's your ring?" And of course, I popped for that pretty hard.
Yeah, that's pretty classic. So we can surmise that in this fictitious Flash 90 universe, that there were other heroes eventually, and maybe even a Justice League. But I'm trying to think anything else notable about the show. They did DC did a crossover issue, or not a crossover issue, but an in continuity of the show comic issue drawn by John Byrne, if I recall correctly. He did the cover or did some of the art to it. But that's all I remember about it. I don't remember any of the stories.
Yeah, I don't remember much about any kind of like comic tie-in for the show. I'm sure that one definitely would have existed, would have made all the sense in the world for DC to do that. But looking back, see like some like old school Flash fans probably would have been excited just to have this on television. And I think back in the 90s, if I were a bigger Flash fan, I would have been too. But
here's the thing. I have a hypothesis on this. The hardcore comic book fans didn't take to this because the Flash was Wally West at the time. Barry Allen had been dead for 5 years in DC Comics continuity as a teenager or late teenager who'd been reading Wally's adventures here and there and grew up with him in the Titans and everything. I was a Wally guy. And so why is DC bringing a TV show featuring a long dead, at least in that time, character to life? They're not going to bring him back in the comics. You don't have any hardcore current comic fans pushing for it. I mean, so I struggle with that because the character is dead in the comics at this point. Now, he was brought back 20 years later, but
I could see like 5 years not really being that much of a separation, but the Wally fandom would have been so, like, would have been on the big upswing around that time. So it probably would have made a lot more sense to try and do a Wally show.
Or have Barry pass the torch to Wally in that first episode.
Yeah, something like that I think maybe would have worked a little better. Ultimately, unfortunately, not what we got. We got this. And it kind of sucks. But
hey, it's better than Shazam. From the 70s.
Yeah, we should clarify that. Not the movie Shazam that just came out. No. That's
it's
good.
Not better than that. It's better than the Filmation 70s show. So, but this is 20 years, almost 20 years later. So, I don't know.
I think I would have appreciated the show a little bit more if they'd have been a little campier with it.
I think maybe so. It was trying to take itself somewhat seriously, even though Garrick, I'm saying Garrick, as I'm talking about John Wesley Shipp, even though he had kind of a good sense of humor about himself, talking to the dog and joking banter.
There are some funny sex jokes in this episode too that ultimately fall kind of flat because of the way they're delivered.
Yeah,
the when Iris and Barry
the aphrodisiac,
the aphrodisiac comment at the beginning, which I eye rolled so hard at. But then there's one that's worse. When they're trying to do this the shtick thing, they've gotten back together and they're like, we're seeing the aftermath of them clearly having had sex, and her dialogue picks up with, you know, I just didn't think it would be over so quickly. And Barry's looking at her, is like, so you're disappointed? And she's like, well, yeah. Like, that's, it was barely anything at all. It's like, you, all this build up and hype, and then that's all you get. It wasn't even really worth it. And this is all delivered so flatly by the actress playing Iris that you're kind of like, is she talking? I was like, I don't think she's talking about the sex here, because Barry doesn't seem to be reacting all that like negatively to what she's saying. Because then he looks over and he's like, yeah, I know what you mean. We paid $20 to watch this fight and it's over in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, just poorly, you know, maybe a disconnect between the writer and the director there. Yes. The actor.
Yeah, it was a big old groan for me. I wasn't feeling it. But I guess that's about it that we can say for this show. The CW version is way better. They got it right.
Yes.
And
times were a little bit more receptive to comic TV shows at that point. We had Smallville, you know, and we had a Flash on Smallville. So even though it wasn't Barry or Wally, it was Bart. And then Arrow set the stage for a better Flash. So, yeah, I'm not going to say it holds up, because it certainly doesn't, but it's of its time. It's an interesting footnote, and amazing that they got 22 episodes out of it, but it was Batmania, and people were looking for the next big superhero thing, is all I can say.
Yeah, and I think the lesson that everyone should take away from something like this is, just because one particular superhero is really popular doesn't mean that you should suddenly turn all of your superheroes into that character or try to make them that character. Flash ain't Batman. Flash is Flash. Let him be that. And you'll be surprised at how successful you can be. Just ask Grant Gustin.
Okay. Well, I think that puts a bow in it. I'm trying to wrap this up with a Flash fact, but I will say that I'm glad the show exists. We can go back and watch it on the DC Universe app, but I understand why it wasn't more successful, right?
Yeah, it's easy to see why this show didn't make it, but you could tell that the experiment that was going on here was ultimately going to lead to something way better. So I think if not for this show's existence, we probably wouldn't have the current Flash TV show.
And a loving homage to have John Wesley Shipp back as that character, and even more importantly, as the Jay Garrick mentor figure. It's very significant to have that connection to me. It's a nice tribute. John Wesley Shipp has his original teeth here, though. And that's one difference between the two Flashes. His teeth here are organic and natural, and they are not necessarily so on the current. His role as Henry Allen the late Henry Allen Jay Garrick on CW Flash.
Them pearls are quite white.
Yeah.
It is certainly a thing. But yeah, I think that's all we can really say for the 1990 Flash for now. I think that we should probably revisit this show at a later time.
Maybe we can dig up one of the Captain Cold or Trickster episodes, or the episode where they're there's not a reverse Flash, but there is a Bizarro Flash. Maybe we can check in on it later, see how the series developed within that one series season of time. So I think that kind of wraps us up. What do you think?
Yep, we're good. That is
okay.
That is all I think either of us can really muster to say on the pilot episode of the 1990 Flash TV show.
Not a lot of. I will say some things you go back and there's the nostalgia. I didn't necessarily feel that. I didn't feel the nostalgia for 1990 when I watched this. Although I enjoyed certain things about it, I didn't go, oh, that's the world I want to be in. It's not like Stranger Things where you go, yeah, things were so cool back then. This is kind of this weird idealized 1990 that never existed anywhere. Not even when I was there. Not even, you know, Batman's its own thing. This should have been its own thing and not trying so hard to be Batman.
Yeah, that is its biggest folly. So with that, sounds like we've kind of come to the end of Flash Month here. Kind of sucks to wrap it up on a note that we didn't really enjoy this last little bit of it, but there was still so much good stuff to enjoy with the Flash throughout this month. And I'm sure when we come back next week to talk about some modern comics and what's happening right now, I may have some praise for another Flash thing that's going on. So, you know, come back for that next week. Should be some good stuff for you. But in any case, you can, of course, reach us on the usual social media channels, at Russell_Sellers on Twitter and Instagram. Todd is
at Todd Weber Guitar, which has nothing to do with comics, on Twitter. That's the best place to check me out. Please join Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook, PTBN Comics. Search us on Twitter. We're there for you, willing to talk about our shows, all our comics content on the network, and that about does it. So,
yes.
For Russell Sellers, I am Todd Weber. We will see you next time on DC for You.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, it's your manager, Todd Weber, here to tell you all about the great content we've got on our podcast feeds at the Place to Be Nation. Starting off with the Place to Be Nation pop feed, we've got weekly shows. That's right, Hard Traveling Fanboys welcome WWE SmackDown referee Jason Ayers for a brand new series called Secret Origins. Jason delves into the similarities between comic books and wrestling, and he explains the stories and characters that have made him a lifelong comics fan, thanks to Ben Morse for hooking us up. On the next episode, HTF counted down the top DC animated movies with my co-host, Russell Sellers. Russell Sellers, who is also on DC For You. Last couple weeks, we kicked off Flash Month with our guests, the aforementioned Greg Phillips, with Ben Morse, previously mentioned as well. We talked about Wally West versus Barry Allen. We talked about the Scarlet Speedster Flash, their best stories, writers, and artists, as well as multiple appearances in TV and movies. Then last week, we talked about Flash 123, the Flash of Two Worlds, the birth of the DC multiverse. We've got a brand new show on the Pop Feed as siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast. On episode 16, they bring you The Office Season 3, episodes 3 and 4, Beats, Bears, Battlestar Galactica. This week, we've got the This Week in the NFL. That's right. Every week, Roger and Johnny recap the last set of games and previewing the forthcoming weekend's batch. Check it out. We've got lots of other content filling up the feed every month. We've got Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, Scott Criscolo previewing the upcoming fall and winter movie releases on a brand new Looking Forward, Looking Back. Jennifer Smith also invited Nate Milton to watch Jordan Peele's Get Out on the 13th episode of Freak Out Drive-In. Jennifer Smith joins Tim Capel and Justin Rosero on an episode of Pop Goes the Movies. I'm sorry, Pop Goes the Couch. Yes, that spotlighted Glow Season 3. The girls go to Las Vegas. Great stuff. Jenny and Miranda had Geek and Sassy previewing the new fall TV series season, filled with lots of series. They've got a big contest. Check out their last episode. Stay tuned to their social media. Like them on Facebook. Geek and Sassy. I said Gweek. That's not a word. Geek and Sassy on Facebook. Geek and Sassy on Twitter. Jennifer Smith was joined by Tim and Justin Rosero, and they talked weight loss, religion, politics on the latest Can't Miss Talk and Pop. We also have new episodes of Marvel Age covering 1972 featuring me, Russell, Nick Duke, and Tim Capel. We also had That's It. So that was what's going on Pop Feed. Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament continues on Facebook. There's just a few rounds left. There's going to be 4 polls a day, but we're winding down here. You can get in on the action by searching on Facebook PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament. Like the page, weigh in, vote every darn day. Lots of stuff going on at the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed as well. Place to Be podcast, The Mothership. Looked at MSG, No Holds Barred, JT Rosero, Aaron, George from Canada, talking AEW, NXT UK, Wednesday Night Wars, and the Neville Brothers. The Neville Mothers, the Neville Brothers. Peter Winston and Steve Bennett talk about their fine wrestling show called The Adams Division on their latest episode. On episode 22 of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zanny was joined by Cabana Dan Man. Cabana Man Dan. Not Colt Cabana Dan Man. Cabana Man Dan. To talk about his experience in over a decade in the wrestling business, Greg, Jenny, Tim are back on talking to WCW, looking at Rick Rude. There's also a brand new episode of Extreme Three-Way Dance with Jennifer Smith, JT Rosero, and J. Arsenio D'Amato. Every Wednesday, we've got Glenn's weekly walk around the web on placetobenation.com. Check it out. Also have Scott Criscolo, Logan Crossland with weekly campus hot takes talking about college football. I don't have a college football team. Sac State is pretty terrible. Every Tuesday afternoon, that drops. If you're doing your online shopping at Amazon.com, click on PlaceToBeNation.com first. Click our Amazon banner. It helps us out quite a bit for free. Check out our social media pages and message board at Bigelow34.proboards.com and join up with our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. All right, see you next week on Deep Sea For You.